Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, this is Ellen Rogan, your host of today's edition of Horse's Mouth Advisor Radio. I'm here to interview guests who have great information to help you be more successful in every area of your life, especially your business. I am so excited that our guest is here today. It's Mary Beth Kuzmetsky, who's president of Red Zone Marketing. I imagine that many of you are familiar with Mary Beth because she speaks at industry conferences all across the country. And she's really a specialist on business growth in the financial services industry. Her presentations are all focused on marketing and what is working now in the industry, all backed by case studies of success that can be taken and implemented immediately. She's also the acclaimed author of 7 books, including The Connectors and The Clients Went Wild, and has appeared on all sorts of media outlets, including Fox News, Forbes, Wall Street Journal. Mary Beth has personally consulted with some of the nation's top teams and advisory firms, managing from $250 million to over $1 billion in assets, and her focus is assisting these practices to rise to the next level in net new assets through building value, forming strategic alliances that really work, attacking target markets, and marketing and messaging tangible benefits. She has experience taking teams through massive growth and has a passion for sharing with others what's working. And she's going to be sharing a lot of this information with us today. I've known Mary Beth personally for years. I've seen her present. She's just awesome. I've worked with her personally, and she really knows. She's the real deal about what it takes to help advisors grow. Welcome, Mary Beth.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad to be on today.
So let's jump right in. Like, what do you see is the best marketing strategy right now for advisors?
Well, you know, I always get asked that question, and the answer is the same today as it was in 1994 when I opened the doors to my firm, and that's the acquisition of referrals, because it's where our best clients come from. But I think the issue is that advisors don't look at that as a, quote, marketing strategy. They think, well, seminars are a marketing strategy, or direct mail or email campaigns are, you know, that's a marketing strategy, but don't have a succinct plan for being able to get referrals from their clients.
Yeah, and I hear advisors, they'll say that their business mostly comes from referrals, but I think you're right, they don't see that as something that they proactively really need to be focusing on.
Right, and one of the things that we always say is, you know, instead of taking a look at your entire client base and saying, well, they all should be giving me referrals, it's to really take, I don't know, maybe 20 minutes and look through the list of your clients and determine who are the 10 people in your list of clients that are most probably or have the highest propensity to give you referrals. They know a lot of people, they're well-connected in the community, they work at a company where there's lots of other people, they have a position in HR, whatever it might be, but you pick 5 or 10 within the entire client base, and then you put together specific strategies for those 5 to 10. It's not like doing lots of client appreciation events and getting all your clients involved, because usually that's disappointing in the acquisition of referrals. It's how do we focus on just a few that have the highest propensity to perhaps give us referrals, and, you know, make sure that we're in front of them face-to-face, and we take them out to lunch, and we ask them specific questions, and we ask them to be our advocate, and that changes everything when we get down to the sort of nitty-gritty or the lowest common denominator, as opposed to taking the whole book of business, and it becomes sort of an undoable sort of situation.
Is there one specific question that you can share with the listeners today that might be helpful if they were to take one of their best clients out for lunch?
Well, one of the things that we've seen really works is, you know, not necessarily talking about referrals at all, but talking about some of the things, you know, let me just give you a little overview of some of the things we're doing in our practice right now. I know you know our practice, you're a client, but here are some of the things we're doing, and we know that there's a lot of people out there who are not being served this way. Do you have any advice for me on how maybe I can reach out to more people to be able to serve them in the way that we are serving you and others, because people need it right now? And so that little short conversation is all about, can I get your advice?
Mm.
And it's asking somebody who knows other people, and if you have chosen them correctly, they will, not sometimes, but they will always say, well, maybe I should introduce you to somebody, or, well, why don't you do this or that, or have a cocktail party, and I'll bring some of my friends to it, or, you know, all sorts of things come out of this if you just ask for their advice. If you ask them for referrals, it's a different kind of a conversation. It's asking for advice.
Okay, so listeners, that's like a million-dollar idea you just got in the first couple minutes of listening to Mary Beth. That's so awesome. I love that. People love being asked for help. And, you know, if you ask it authentically, you know, without like this big hidden agenda, but you really do want their advice. If they're that successful, they probably have stuff to share with you. I love that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks. So what do you see as one of the biggest mistakes that advisors make in marketing?
Yeah, you know, I hear that, people will say, well, it's probably that I'm not spending enough money, or I'm not out there enough, or I'm not doing enough of whatever it is as it relates to marketing. But the biggest mistake in marketing is really none of those things. It's the advisor's ability or inability to message themselves properly. And you say, well, what does that mean? Well, messaging themselves, if somebody says you're at a business function and somebody asks a financial advisor, what do? The financial advisor says, I'm a financial advisor. And 9 times out of 10, that makes the person that they've just said that to not as interested in talking to them as they were maybe before. And it's not anything wrong with being a financial advisor. It just is the industry. It's just the way it is. If somebody says, I'm a financial advisor, they think to that last person, insurance agent or something, that tried to sell them life insurance. They group you into that group, and they say, I don't think I want to talk to you. And you think about it. You're at a business function to attract people, yet you're repelling them mm-hmm. by virtue of what you are saying, which is actually true. But I think going a little bit deeper, it's how we describe what it is that we do as financial advisors. Most people don't know, what does your financial advisor do? I don't know, they do some investing for me, or they did some financial planning for me, or, you know, whatever it is, but it doesn't seem that it's always so clear to the prospect or the client what it is that you do, and why it is that they should do it with you, which I think is even bigger. So we're giving a lot of features. I'm a financial advisor. We do financial planning, investment management, and all this sort of blah, blah stuff. Not that it's boring in essence, but it doesn't really connect with anybody. Mm-hmm. And that's the essence of messaging, is does it connect with somebody? And what it's either doing is it's not connecting, or it's going in one ear and out the other, because we can't remember features. Tell me why it should be important to me. And one of the things that we like to suggest to advisors is that you use a connector statement between the feature and the benefit to get to something that they actually might care about. So, for instance, I'll give you a scenario. Someone could say, well, why should I do business with you as opposed to the firm across the street? And you say, well, you know, I've been in this business for 20 years. Well, 20 years is a feature. It's not a benefit, and I don't know why that – I'd have to come to the conclusion of why that's a good idea, or why that makes sense, or what the benefits are. So instead of saying it just like that, you say, well, you know, I've been in the business for 20 years. Let me tell you why I think that's important, or let me tell you why I think that might be important. You know, I've got my CFP. Let me tell you why that might be important. I work with XYZ firm. Let me tell you why I think that might be important. My staff has been with me, all of them, for more than 15 years. Let me tell you why I think that might be important. And once you say, let me tell you why I think that's important, the next words that you say have got to be the benefit. And all of a sudden, you're talking directly to the person that you're speaking with. Now, you have to be prepared to have those conversations, but they're a lot more powerful than just saying the fact or, you know, the feature without giving them the benefit. And they might be thinking negative things as opposed to the positive things that you want them to think of. And you know, instead of saying, I'm a financial advisor, maybe you say who it is that you do it for. So I've got a client that says something like this, which is not necessarily benefit, but at least we get closer to not being as sort of in that group of financial advisors. I'm a financial advisor, and we work exclusively with corporate executives getting ready to retire from Abbott Labs. Now, you say, well, that's kind of really specific, and what if they don't work at Abbott Labs? It is a home run statement that he uses, and this advisor uses it, and he says a lot of the clients or a lot of the people that he's speaking with when he describes who he is, and subsequently who he works with, they say things like, well, do you also work with executives from Motorola? Well, yes, we do. And it gets into a conversation that he wants to have with people. And he becomes a little bit more interesting than just being a financial advisor that does anything and everything for anyone and everyone.
I love that word exclusively, too. It just feels so much, it would make me want to jump in and say, wow, can I be in that exclusive club? You know, even though it just means maybe only, it can also mean kind of a unique group. It's really a,
right.
It's really great wording. It reminds me of when I first met you, Mary Beth, and we started talking about working together, and then you told me you couldn't work with me because there was someone else in the area that had, you know, that you were already working with and you didn't want to have competition, and then I wanted to work with you more. I'm taking notes and notes. This is such great information. So let me tell you why that might be important benefit. I think it's really easy for us to just focus on the features, especially because many advisors have such analytical minds, and we're thinking, well, this is really what I do. But people really want to know how it's going to help them, not really what you physically do.
Yeah, tell them why it should matter to them.
Yeah.
I always say, if you can imagine somebody saying, who cares, after you say something, or why should this matter to me, then you're not giving them the benefits and you're not using strong enough language that describes what you do. And the problem, you say, well, I don't want to get all specific and tell them all these things, but the average attention span in the United States is 9 seconds. So if we don't tell them something, they're not going to pay attention to us at all. And it's no wonder that networking is one of the least successful marketing strategies for financial advisors, when it should be right after referrals in terms of success. But we go into these events, we go into business functions, we describe ourselves, and we're not doing ourselves any favors.
Great. So, you know, in terms of marketing strategies, are advisors still doing seminars and events successfully? And if it is, like, what's working?
Well, one of the things that I see that's so interesting is that, you know, seminars 10 years ago were really successful. And then attendance started to drop, and the success wasn't the same as it was. You had to send out more mail to get the same amount of people in the seminar, and it just wasn't working the way that advisors wanted it to work. And so a lot of advisors stopped doing seminars. And now, if you think about it, the seminar invitation comes through the mail. No one is mailing anything anymore. I mean, the post office is practically going out of business. When you do get mail, you see it now. Today, our mail sticks out differently than in the days of all the junk mail. Well, those days are kind of gone. We're not getting nearly as much junk mail as we did, and we think that that's partially the reason. And the other part of the reason that seminars are much more successful today is because there's not a lot of advisors that are doing seminars anymore. So the lack of mail and the fact that not a lot of advisors are doing seminars anymore are causing seminars. I know at the end of 2012 and in the beginning of 2013, I have many clients who are doing seminars and finding them to be successful right now in terms of getting qualified or reasonably qualified prospects in the room. Like, not every single person is going to be qualified, but you just need some, and you need to be able to close them to make it a worthwhile event. And we're seeing that seminars are working again, which I think is great, because I always thought that seminars were such a great way of expanding your reach in a quick amount of time, and then they just, you know, they stopped working, sort of, but now they are back, and seminars really are working, and events actually are working as well, too, just general events, as long as they're purposed correctly. So there's a lot of client appreciation events that seem to be, you know, it feels good for the clients, and it's, you know, but there's not a lot of tangible benefits from doing that, besides just keeping in touch with the clients. And if that's your goal, then you're achieving it. But if your goal is, hey, I want to get some new clients, I want them to bring referrals, I'd love to use this to acquire new clients. Some events are not working that way, but some of them are very specific events where you're specifically acquiring referrals, asking your clients to bring friends, and making it mandatory, as opposed to just saying, well, you know, in the invitation, you know, please bring guests or something, and then you wonder why no one ever brings anyone. But if you have specific conversations with your clients about, this is a special event just for those that want to introduce us to someone, we are finding that that is having success also in acquiring new clients. So regular general prospecting seminars are working, and seminars where you're making a specific request to your best clients and advocates to bring a person or two to an event that might be an educational event, it might be just a fun event, it might be just going out golfing, who knows what it is, but it if they bring people and they're bringing the right people, it works. And we've seen advisors have a lot of success with those referral-based events also.
In terms of the more public seminars, what kind of topics are people speaking on?
Well, I have one advisor that spoke on reducing the complexity of money in your life. And I thought, well, that's kind of an, you know, it's kind of an out there kind of a topic, but he was looking for high net worth people who have lots of complexity surrounding money. And he, not only did he fill the three seminars that were on the invitation, he added two more because the three seminars on his invitation filled up. They started another list, and they opened up two other additional seminars. So it works. There's also Social Security seminars that are working right now, which, you know, some of these topics, I wouldn't think that they would be generating a lot of popularity, but it depends who your target market is, the age of those clients and or those prospects, and the topic that matches that, and Social Security seminars are working as well. So it's, you know, it's interesting. It's not always what we think is working, but my advice always is if you're using a seminar marketing company like a Response Mail or some company like that, is to ask them what seminars are getting the most response that you're seeing and let them tell you because they've got all the analytics.
Great, great advice. So when you're working with your consulting clients, is there one thing you teach them to be more successful in their practices or one key thing?
Well, the one thing that we look at as the most important thing for financial advisors is this art of social intelligence. Now, that sounds kind of, well, what does that have to do with bringing on more clients? Well, frankly, it has everything to do with bringing on more clients. The social intelligence is the ability to connect and communicate, and it's the underlying factor in why all of our marketing works. And so we always work not only with the advisor, because usually the advisor has a very high level of social intelligence, but we can always get better at our social intelligence. But the staff, sometimes they go through training. There's books that, I mean, I've written books on the topic. There's lots of things that can be done. But how socially intelligent are we? Because we don't need to be the smartest person on earth. We need to be the one that's going to connect with people in the most succinct way so that we can actually help them. If we can't connect with them, we can't serve them. And so we've just looked at that factor of connecting. So, you, for instance, you could have a great seminar, and you could get all these people coming and scheduling appointments. But if something is happening in that appointment or something happens in that in your reception area with your assistant and they just get kind of – something doesn't go exactly right – you may not be closing as many sales, and you might think, well, maybe I don't have the most qualified people, or maybe there's something I'm doing wrong in my presentation. But a lot of times, 80% of the reason somebody chooses you is because of you. It's because of your interpersonal communication, not the fact that you've got all of these great products in your lineup. It's your interpersonal communication, and sometimes it's how we ask questions and how much we talk and how much we listen in a meeting, and we go through a lot of things to be able to improve on just listening skills, and you think, well, that's not marketing. Well, we've found that if we don't do some of those things, the marketing looks like it's not working because we can generate people and put them in front of you, but even for the top advisors. And by the way, when we get calls from advisors, they're not calling us because things are going great. Nobody ever calls us when things are out of control great. They don't think about hiring a marketing consultant. They think about hiring us when they go, you know what, we could be doing better. We should be doing better. And we look at the foundation before we start recommending a whole bunch of expensive marketing strategies. We say, well, how is your staff doing this? And how are we communicating? How are we connecting? What are we saying? And we review all of that and usually find some very big gaps that we can fill quickly, easily, and without spending hardly any money at all.
And it's really interesting to talk about staff training because many advisors have relatively small practices. And, you know, as opposed to like a really large firm where it has a training and development department, I don't think that many advisors I know think about, besides technically training their staff, but training them in terms of sales or marketing or interpersonal skills. I bet that's a huge area that's ignored by most advisors.
It really is, and what we've done in to sort of meet that need is, you know, they're not going to pay for a whole day of training or something, but we've come up with a 14 course, very short, under 6 minutes of each course, online training course. So 14 courses, they can go online, they can learn these things and do them. And you know what the staff says after they go through these programs and the training? They say, you know what? The advisor needs to go through this too, because they'll see, hey, none of us are perfect at this. None of us are perfect at this. We all could get better. But it's one of those things where the staff says, the advisor says, I need to send my staff through this. And the staff says, the advisor needs to go through it too. But it's interesting because it makes a really huge difference in the profitability of a firm. We've seen it. We've done the numbers. We've looked at it. People don't think about social intelligence. They think that's sort of an out there thing. I'd rather just be better with products and have something better to sell and have a better sales script or a better referral script. But at the end of the day, we just simply close more sales because people want to do business with us if we raised our social intelligence.
Great. Thank you. Great advice. So can we talk a little bit about social media? Like, it's relatively new because of compliance stuff in our industry. It's not really new, but people are just starting to dip their toes in, I think. So should advisors be using social media regularly, and have you seen it help them grow their businesses?
Well, I have seen social media work. Now, there's a lot of advisors who are, you know, involved in social media. Maybe they dip their toe in the water. There's still groups of advisors and different firms that have not fully allowed social media, even just to use LinkedIn. But depending on what your firm's, you know, what your firm allows, I would really suggest finding out what you can do and maximize your social media exposure, because what we see is the most important part about social media is the exposure that you get. It's not necessarily that you've got to be out there tweeting 10 times a day, or that you've got to be posting to Facebook all, you know, you've got to be writing all this content and doing all of this stuff, and advisors are busy enough, they don't have time to tweet 10 times a day. By the way, if you want to make Twitter work, that's what you have to do. Now, there's some young advisors who say, well, that's great, I want to do that. But, you know, if you just say, I want to be involved in social media and I'd like it to actually help my business, we just suggest that you go through, you look at your profiles. Let's say you're on LinkedIn, and that's the only place that you're on. You go on LinkedIn and make sure that your profile is completely set up, that it describes what you do in the same kind of great verbiage that you have on your website. If you don't have great verbiage on your website, fix that first, then fix your social media. But really describe who you are and who you work with, and tell people, without saying it exactly like this, but tell them why they should be working with you. Give them some framework around what it is that you do and who it is that you work with and the services that you provide. And if you do that really clear and concisely, for instance, on LinkedIn, plus you've got where you went to college and some of your certifications and things like that, you can really build a credible profile for yourself. You don't have to be involved in all the craziness that is or can be social media. So the first step is to make sure you've got a good profile. And for LinkedIn, make sure that it's public. Go in, edit your profile, and make sure that everything is marked as public, because you don't have to be connected to somebody for them to see your profile. Let prospects see it, because the people that are going to be searching for you are not your clients. They're going to be your prospects or people that are thinking about coming to your seminar or coming in for a meeting. They've just been referred to you. They're going to check you out online. Make sure that you've got as much great stuff up there, especially if we can do it for free, that we possibly can. And then the next level is to use, you know, for instance, LinkedIn as a way to mine and, you know, join groups and start conversations and do all of those sorts of things that might be the second level. And then, you know, if you decide that you want to get into Facebook and all of that, we've seen successes. I've got actual numbers of successes of advisors using social media. But usually the advisors have stopped before they've reached that success, because they just go, it's a lot of work, it's all this compliance and posting all these updates, and that's frankly not what it's about. Social media is about being out there, getting exposure, and being social with those that might have an interest in knowing more about who you are and what it is that you do. Yes, you want to connect with your clients, but it's really all about the exposure for prospects. So I've written a whole book on social media for financial advisors because I think that as simple a concept it is, because of the compliance, it has been so it's complex. It really is complex, and advisors need the help to figure out what it is that they're supposed to do, what's really going to work, and where am I just going to be wasting my time? Because not an advisor I know or any advisor that exists that wants to waste time in social media.
Yeah, and I think I've seen that there's when people are just getting started, it really feels overwhelming, like it's so hard and they don't have time to figure it out. But, you know, my experience is that once you get going, it's really not that hard. And if there's a resource like your book that really is speaking to financial advisors, really awesome, because that can cut through the learning curve.
The other thing is, if you hire somebody under the age of like 25, they can do this stuff so quickly. It's all you have to be able to do is have a conversation about what you'd like to have happen. And, you know, somebody under the age of 25 can do this stuff in a couple of minutes, where it might take somebody that's a little bit older a lot more time to kind of figure out the nuances of the software or the, you know, the online program, as opposed to having somebody else who knows how to do that. You don't need to be the expert. You just need to know what you want the outcome to be.
Yeah. So let's take this discussion into a little bit about websites. So how should advisors be looking at updating their websites?
Well, there's advisors that have some older platforms where their websites are on, and I, you know, when we look at some of the websites, we just say, okay, this website, if you look at this, does this look like a progressive new website, or does this look like something that hasn't been updated since, you know, the 1990s or something? And a lot of financial advisor websites, they were done several years ago, and they're up there, and they look old. And here's the problem with that. And when I say look old, it just means that maybe the screen space is really small, sort of a column in the middle, or it doesn't have pictures, or it's got a bunch of clip art or graphics that aren't people that work in the office. It just looks like it's not a personal site. It looks like it's it could be for any kind of a company. And there's lots and lots and lots of words on the site. Well, today, the goal is to have few words that concisely describe what it is that you do, and I mean a sentence or two on the home page. That's it. And then it's all about navigation to have them be able to see who this firm is, feel who this firm is, be able to see the people that work at the firm. One of the number one things that we do to update websites, or we recommend to update websites, is to say, change your home page picture. You might have some scrolling pictures, but make sure one of them is somebody that works in your office. Because when someone's coming to an independent advisor's website, or even a website at a wirehouse or anything like that, they're not looking for the big firm. They're looking for you. Who am I going to be talking to? Who am I going to be meeting with? What is this person about? And it's true, the most clicked on page on your website is the About Us page, or the page that describes your bio or who you are. But why not give them some of that on the home page and let them see who it is that they're going to be working with? It really makes a site come alive. So few words, more authentic pictures, and very simple navigation that gets them to go where you want them to go. So let's say you've got a few targets. You work with those that are getting ready to – well, here's an example. We work with this one firm. They have a target of, they work with people that are getting ready to retire and people that are in retirement. So on their homepage, they've got two boxes that you can click on when you get to the homepage. One says, if you're nearing retirement, click here. If you're in retirement, click here. And so if somebody gets to that site and they're nearing retirement, they go, oh, that's all these people work with, just people like me. Mm-hmm. And it works. It's crazy, because what you're doing is identifying most of the population, but they people want to feel that you know something about what it is that they need. And you can do that no matter what your target is. So it's that's basically what we recommend. I don't think you've got to go through and make massive changes and spend $10,000 to change your website. I think you update your profile, or you update your template that you're using to something that's more progressive. You don't want to look like you're sort of behind the times as a financial advisor, because clients in their 40s, 50s, and 60s want to know that you're technologically savvy, and your website, although it doesn't say whether you are or you're not, it shows. something about your firm, and we want to make sure that we're showing that we have the technological savvy to be able to serve clients who have complex needs.
Yeah, I would just add that how important it is to have good pictures on your website. If you're professionally taken photos, we didn't have pictures for the longest time, and we finally took all our staff down to get professional photos taken. We had a fun morning doing it, but I think it's important. Sometimes I see pictures on websites that I can't believe someone would actually put out publicly.
I know. And part of that is just they're not paying attention to it. It's a picture from a long time ago, and someone else put it up there, and maybe they don't even go to the site. Well, it's time to pay a little bit more attention to that because, again, people are going to Google you when they are getting ready to come in and see you or come to a seminar or come to an event or someone's referred you. They won't sometimes look. They will always look. They will always search for you today because it's not like we're hiring a private investigator. We're leaning over to our laptop and typing in your name to see what you're about or to get directions to your office or whatever it is, and we don't want that to be the stopping point that gets them to not come into the office and see you.
Wow, this is so much great information, Mary Beth. I can't believe it, but we're out of time now. But I want to, if people want to get a hold of you or learn more about what you do or some of the resources you have, where would they go?
You can go to redzonemarketing.com, and that's the best place to find all things. We've got lots of free resources under a section on our website called Freemiums. There's all sorts of free resources and articles and worksheets and downloads and videos and all sorts of things that you can that a financial advisor could access and help them with their business. And then we also have some resources like the book for social media for financial advisors and the online training for social intelligence and, you know, six other books that I've written as well.
And I would encourage the listeners to get on Mary Beth's email list. I get her emails. Do I get them weekly, Mary Beth?
Weekly, yes.
Weekly. There's videos. There's really great resources. Mary Beth makes sure that it's her original content, and then there's also resources just from all the research that Mary Beth does. And I find it so valuable, and there's often videos, so you get to see how great Mary Beth is and hear her advice. So I really am so grateful. Thank you so much, Mary Beth. Again, it's redzonemarketing.com. And just by end by saying, I'm Ellen Rogan, and if you want more prosperity and success tips, you can find them on my website at ellenrogan.com. And until next time, the question to ponder is, how big of a positive impact are you willing to make? I'm wishing you success in every area of your life. Remember, be great and create great every single day.
Presentation is offered specifically for financial advisors and may not be reproduced, broadcast, or distributed without permission from Horse's Mouth. Unauthorized use, reproduction, or distribution of this material is a violation of federal law and punishable by civil and criminal penalty.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Ellen Rogan, your host of today's edition of Horse's Mouth Advisor Radio. I'm here to interview guests who have great information to help you be more successful in every area of your life, especially your business. I am so excited that our guest is here today. It's Mary Beth Kuzmetsky, who's president of Red Zone Marketing. I imagine that many of you are familiar with Mary Beth because she speaks at industry conferences all across the country. And she's really a specialist on business growth in the financial services industry. Her presentations are all focused on marketing and what is working now in the industry, all backed by case studies of success that can be taken and implemented immediately. She's also the acclaimed author of 7 books, including The Connectors and The Clients Went Wild, and has appeared on all sorts of media outlets, including Fox News, Forbes, Wall Street Journal. Mary Beth has personally consulted with some of the nation's top teams and advisory firms, managing from $250 million to over $1 billion in assets, and her focus is assisting these practices to rise to the next level in net new assets through building value, forming strategic alliances that really work, attacking target markets, and marketing and messaging tangible benefits. She has experience taking teams through massive growth and has a passion for sharing with others what's working. And she's going to be sharing a lot of this information with us today. I've known Mary Beth personally for years. I've seen her present. She's just awesome. I've worked with her personally, and she really knows. She's the real deal about what it takes to help advisors grow. Welcome, Mary Beth.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad to be on today.
So let's jump right in. Like, what do you see is the best marketing strategy right now for advisors?
Well, you know, I always get asked that question, and the answer is the same today as it was in 1994 when I opened the doors to my firm, and that's the acquisition of referrals because it's where our best clients come from. But I think the issue is that advisors don't look at that as a, quote, marketing strategy. They think, well, seminars are a marketing strategy, or direct mail or email campaigns are, you know, that's a marketing strategy, but don't have a succinct plan for being able to get referrals from their clients.
Yeah, and I hear advisors, they'll say that their business mostly comes from referrals, but I think you're right, they don't see that as something that they proactively really need to be focusing on.
Right, and one of the things that we always say is, you know, instead of taking a look at your entire client base and saying, well, they all should be giving me referrals, it's to really take, I don't know, maybe 20 minutes and look through the list of your clients and determine who are the 10 people in your list of clients that are most probably or have the highest propensity to give you referrals. They know a lot of people. They're well-connected in the community. They work at a company where there's lots of other people. They have a position in HR, whatever it might be. But, you pick 5 or 10 within the entire client base, and then you put together specific strategies for those 5 to 10. It's not like doing lots of client appreciation events and getting all your clients involved, because usually that's disappointing in the acquisition of referrals. It's how do we focus on just a few that have the highest propensity to perhaps give us referrals and, you know, make sure that we're in front of them face-to-face, and we take them out to lunch, and we ask them specific questions, and we ask them to be our advocate, and that changes everything when we get down to the sort of nitty-gritty or the lowest common denominator, as opposed to taking the whole book of business, and it becomes sort of an undoable sort of situation.
Is there one specific question that you can share with the listeners today that might be helpful if they were to take one of their best clients out to lunch?
Well, one of the things that we've seen really works is, you know, not necessarily talking about referrals at all, but talking about some of the things, you know, let me just give you a little overview of some of the things we're doing in our practice right now. I know you know our practice, you're a client, but here are some of the things we're doing, and we know that there's a lot of people out there who are not being served this way. Do you have any advice for me on how maybe I can reach out to more people to be able to serve them in the way that we are serving you and others, because people need it right now? And so that little short conversation is all about, can I get your advice?
Mm.
And it's asking somebody who knows other people, and if you have chosen them correctly, they will, not sometimes, but they will always say, well, maybe I should introduce you to somebody, or, well, why don't you do this or that, or have a cocktail party, and I'll bring some of my friends to it, or, you know, all sorts of things come out of this if you just ask for their advice. If you ask them for referrals, it's a different kind of a conversation. It's asking for advice.
Okay, so listeners, that's like $1 million idea you just got in the first couple of minutes of listening to Mary Beth. That's so awesome. I love that. People love being asked for help. And, you know, if you ask it authentically, you know, without like this big hidden agenda, but you really do want their advice. If they're that successful, they probably have stuff to share with you. I'd love that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks. So what do you see as one of the biggest mistakes that advisors make in marketing?
Yeah, you know, I hear that, people will say, well, it's probably that I'm not spending enough money, or I'm not out there enough, or I'm not doing enough of whatever it is as it relates to marketing. But the biggest mistake in marketing is really none of those things. It's the advisor's ability or inability to message themselves properly. And you say, well, what does that mean? Well, messaging themselves, if somebody says you're at a business function and somebody asks a financial advisor, what do? The financial advisor says, I'm a financial advisor. And 9 times out of 10, that makes the person that they've just said that to not as interested in talking to them as they were maybe before. And it's not anything wrong with being a financial advisor. It just is the industry. It's just the way it is. If somebody says, I'm a financial advisor, they think to that last person, insurance agent or something, that tried to sell them life insurance. They group you into that group, and they say, I don't think I want to talk to you. And you think about it. You're at a business function to attract people, yet you're repelling them mm-hmm. by virtue of what you are saying, which is actually true. But I think going a little bit deeper, it's how we describe what it is that we do as financial advisors. Most people don't know, what does your financial advisor do? I don't know, they do some investing for me, or they did some financial planning for me, or you know, whatever it is, but it doesn't seem that it's always so clear to the prospect or the client what it is that you do and why it is that they should do it with you, which I think is even bigger. So we're giving a lot of features. I'm a financial advisor. We do financial planning, investment management, and all this sort of blah, blah stuff. Not that it's boring in essence, but it doesn't really connect with anybody. Mm-hmm. And that's the essence of messaging, is does it connect with somebody? And what it's either doing is it's not connecting, or it's going in one ear and out the other, because we can't remember features. Tell me why it should be important to me. And one of the things that we like to suggest to advisors is that you use a connector statement between the feature and the benefit to get to something that they actually might care about. So, for instance, I'll give you a scenario. Someone could say, well, why should I do business with you as opposed to the firm across the street? And you say, well, you know, I've been in this business for 20 years. Well, 20 years is a feature. It's not a benefit, and I don't know why that – I'd have to come to the conclusion of why that's a good idea or why that makes sense or what the benefits are. So instead of saying it just like that, you say, well, you know, I've been in the business for 20 years. Let me tell you why I think that's important, or let me tell you why I think that might be important. You know, I've got my CFP. Let me tell you why that might be important. I work with XYZ firm. Let me tell you why I think that might be important. My staff has been with me, all of them, for more than 15 years. Let me tell you why I think that might be important. And once you say, let me tell you why I think that's important, the next words that you say have got to be the benefit. And all of a sudden, you're talking directly to the person that you're speaking with. Now, you have to be prepared to have those conversations, but they're a lot more powerful than just saying the fact or, you know, the feature without giving them the benefit. And they might be thinking negative things as opposed to the positive things that you want them to think of. And you know, instead of saying, I'm a financial advisor, maybe you say who it is that you do it for. So I've got a client that says something like this, which is not necessarily benefit, but at least we get closer to not being as sort of in that group of financial advisors. I'm a financial advisor, and we work exclusively with corporate executives getting ready to retire from Abbott Labs. Now, you say, well, that's kind of really specific, and what if they don't work at Abbott Labs? It is a home run statement that he uses, and this advisor uses it, and he says a lot of the clients or a lot of the people that he's speaking with, when he describes who he is and subsequently who he works with, they say things like, well, do you also work with executives from Motorola? Well, yes, we do. And it gets into a conversation that he wants to have with people. And he becomes a little bit more interesting than just being a financial advisor that does anything and everything for anyone and everyone.
I love that word exclusively, too. It just feels so much it would make me want to jump in and say, wow, can I be in that exclusive club? You know, even though it just means maybe only, it can also mean kind of a unique group. It's really a,
right.
It's really great wording. It reminds me of when I first met you, Mary Beth, and we started talking about working together, and then you told me you couldn't work with me because there was someone else in the area that had, you know, that you were already working with and you didn't want to have competition, and then I wanted to work with you more.
Oh, I
take
know.
Away clothes. I'm taking notes and notes. This is such great information. So let me tell you why that might be important benefit. I think it's really easy for us to just focus on the features, especially because many advisors have such analytical minds, and we're thinking, well, this is really what I do. But people really want to know how it's going to help them, not really what you physically do.
Yeah, tell them why it should matter to them.
Yeah,
I always say, if you can imagine somebody saying, who cares, after you say something, or why should this matter to me, then you're not giving them the benefits and you're not using strong enough language that describes what you do. And the problem, you say, well, I don't want to get all specific and tell them all these things. But the average attention span in the United States is 9 seconds. So if we don't tell them something, they're not going to pay attention to us at all. And it's no wonder that networking is one of the least successful marketing strategies for financial advisors, when it should be right after referrals in terms of success. But we go into these events, we go into business functions, we describe ourselves, and we're not doing ourselves any favors.
Great. So, you know, in terms of marketing strategies, are advisors still doing seminars and events successfully? And if it is, like, what's working?
Well, one of the things that I see that's so interesting is that, you know, seminars 10 years ago were really successful. And then attendance started to drop, and the success wasn't the same as it was. You were spending, you had to send out more mail to get the same amount of people in the seminar, and it just wasn't working the way that advisors wanted it to work. And so a lot of advisors stopped doing seminars. And now, if you think about it, the seminar invitation comes through the mail. No one is mailing anything anymore. I mean, the post office is practically going out of business. When you do get mail, you see it now. Today, our mail sticks out differently than in the days of all the junk mail. Well, those days are kind of gone. We're not getting nearly as much junk mail as we did, and we think that that's partially the reason. And the other part of the reason that seminars are much more successful today is because there's not a lot of advisors that are doing seminars anymore. So the lack of mail and the fact that not a lot of advisors are doing seminars anymore are causing seminars. I know at the end of 2012 and in the beginning of 2013, I have many clients who are doing seminars and finding them to be successful right now in terms of getting qualified or reasonably qualified prospects in the room. Like, not every single person is going to be qualified, but you just need some, and you need to be able to close them to make it a worthwhile event. And we're seeing that seminars are working again, which I think is great, because I always thought that seminars were such a great way of expanding your reach in a quick amount of time, and then they just, you know, they stopped working, sort of, but now they are back, and seminars really are working, and events actually are working as well, too, just general events, as long as they're purposed correctly. So there's a lot of client appreciation events that seem to be, you know, it feels good for the clients, and it's, you know, but there's not a lot of tangible benefits from doing that, besides just keeping in touch with the clients. And if that's your goal, then you're achieving it. But if your goal is, hey, I want to get some new clients, I want them to bring referrals, I'd love to use this to acquire new clients. Some events are not working that way, but some of them are very specific events where you're specifically acquiring referrals, asking your clients to bring friends, and making it mandatory, as opposed to just saying, well, in the invitation, you know, please bring guests or something, and then you wonder why no one ever brings anyone. But if you have specific conversations with your clients about, this is a special event just for those that want to introduce us to someone, we are finding that that is having success also in acquiring new clients. So regular general prospecting seminars are working, and seminars where you're making a specific request to your best clients and advocates to bring a person or two to an event that might be an educational event, it might be just a fun event, it might be just going out golfing, who knows what it is, but it if they bring people and they're bringing the right people, it works. And we've seen advisors have a lot of success with those referral-based events also.
In terms of the more public seminars, what kind of topics are people speaking on?
Well, I have one advisor that spoke on reducing the complexity of money in your life. And I thought, well, that's kind of an, you know, it's kind of an out there kind of a topic. But he was looking for high net worth people who have lots of complexity surrounding money. And he, not only did he fill the three seminars that were on the invitation, he added two more, because the three seminars on his invitation filled up. They started another list, and they opened up two other additional seminars. So it works. There's also Social Security seminars that are working right now, which, you know, some of these topics, I wouldn't think that they would be generating a lot of popularity, but it depends who your target market is, the age of those clients and or those prospects, and the topic that matches that. And Social Security seminars are working as well. So it's, you know, it's interesting. It's not always what we think is working, but my advice always is, if you're using a seminar marketing company like a Response Mail or some company like that, is to ask them what seminars are getting the most response that you're seeing, and let them tell you, because they've got all the analytics.
Great advice. So when you're working with your consulting clients, is there one thing you teach them to be more successful in their practices, or one key thing?
Well, the one thing that we look at as the most important thing for financial advisors is this art of social intelligence. Now, that sounds kind of, well, what does that have to do with bringing on more clients? Well, frankly, it has everything to do with bringing on more clients. The social intelligence is the ability to connect and communicate, and it's the underlying factor in why all of our marketing works. And so we always work not only with the advisor, because usually the advisor has a very high level of social intelligence, but we can always get better at our social intelligence. But the staff, sometimes they go through training. There's books that, I mean, I've written books on the topic. There's lots of things that can be done. But how socially intelligent are we? Because we don't need to be the smartest person on earth. We need to be the one that's going to connect with people in the most succinct way so that we can actually help them. If we can't connect with them, we can't serve them. And so we've just looked at that factor of connecting. So, you, for instance, you could have a great seminar, and you could get all these people coming and scheduling appointments. But if something is happening in that appointment, or something happens in that, in your reception area with your assistant, and they just get kind of, something doesn't go exactly right, you may not be closing as many sales. And you might think, well, maybe I don't have the most qualified people, or maybe there's something I'm doing wrong in my presentation. But a lot of times, 80% of the reason somebody chooses you is because of you. It's because of your interpersonal communication, not the fact that you've got all of these great products in your lineup. It's your interpersonal communication. And sometimes it's how we ask questions, of how much we talk and how much we listen in a meeting. And we go through a lot of things to be able to improve on just listening skills. And you think, well, that's not marketing. Well, we've found that if we don't do some of those things, the marketing looks like it's not working, because we can generate people and put them in front of you. But even for the top advisors, and by the way, when we get calls from advisors, they're not calling us because things are going great. Nobody ever calls us when things are out of control great. They don't think about hiring a marketing consultant. They think about hiring us when they go, you know what, we could be doing better. We should be doing better. And we look at the foundation before we start recommending a whole bunch of expensive marketing strategies. We say, well, how is your staff doing this? And how are we communicating? How are we connecting? What are we saying? And we review all of that and usually find some very big gaps that we can fill quickly, easily, and without spending hardly any money at all.
And it's really interesting to talk about staff training, because many advisors have relatively small practices. And, you know, as opposed to like a really large firm where it has a training and development department, I don't think that many advisors I know think about, besides technically training their staff, but training them in terms of sales or marketing or interpersonal skills. I bet that's a huge area that's ignored by most advisors.
It really is. And what we've done in to sort of meet that need is, you know, they're not going to pay for a whole day of training or something, but we've come up with a 14 course, very short, under 6 minutes of each course, online training course. So 14 courses, they can go online, they can learn these things and do them. And you know what the staff says after they go through these programs and the training? They say, you know what? the advisor needs to go through this too, because they'll see, hey, none of us are perfect at this. None of us are perfect at this. We all could get better. But it's one of those things where the staff says, the advisor says, I need to send my staff through this, and the staff says, the advisor needs to go through it too. But it's interesting because it makes a really huge difference in the profitability of a firm. We've seen it. We've done the numbers. We've looked at it. People don't think about social intelligence. They think that's sort of an out there thing. I'd rather just be better with products and have something better to sell and have a better sales script or a better referral script. But at the end of the day, we just simply close more sales because people want to do business with us if we raised our social intelligence.
Great. Thank you. Great advice. So can we talk a little bit about social media? Like, it's relatively new because of compliance stuff in our industry. It's not really new, but people are just starting to dip their toes in, I think. So should advisors be using social media regularly, and have you seen it help them grow their businesses?
Well, I have seen social media work. Now, there's a lot of advisors who are, you know, involved in social media. Maybe they dip their toe in the water. There's still groups of advisors and different firms that have not fully allowed social media, even just to use LinkedIn. But depending on what your firm's, you know, what your firm allows, I would really suggest finding out what you can do and maximize your social media exposure, because what we see is the most important part about social media is the exposure that you get. It's not necessarily that you've got to be out there tweeting 10 times a day, or that you've got to be posting to Facebook all, you know, you've got to be writing all this content and doing all of this stuff. And advisors are busy enough, they don't have time to tweet 10 times a day. By the way, if you want to make Twitter work, that's what you have to do. Now, there's some young advisors who say, well, that's great, I want to do that. But, you know, if you just say, I want to be involved in social media and I'd like it to actually help my business, we just suggest that you go through, you look at your profiles. Let's say you're on LinkedIn, and that's the only place that you're on. You go on LinkedIn and make sure that your profile is completely set up, that it describes what you do in the same kind of great verbiage that you have on your website. If you don't have great verbiage on your website, fix that first, then fix your social media. But really describe who you are and who you work with, and tell people, without saying it exactly like this, but tell them why they should be working with you. Give them some framework around what it is that you do and who it is that you work with and the services that you provide. And if you do that really clear and concisely, for instance, on LinkedIn, plus you've got where you went to college and some of your certifications and things like that, you can really build a credible profile for yourself. You don't have to be involved in all the craziness that is or can be social media. So the first step is to make sure you've got a good profile. And for LinkedIn, make sure that it's public. Go in, edit your profile, and make sure that everything is marked as public, because you don't have to be connected to somebody for them to see your profile. Let prospects see it, because the people that are going to be searching for you are not your clients. They're going to be your prospects, or people that are thinking about coming to your seminar or coming in for a meeting. They've just been referred to you. They're going to check you out online. Make sure that you've got as much great stuff up there, especially if we can do it for free, that we possibly can. And then the next level is to use, you know, for instance, LinkedIn as a way to mine and, you know, join groups and start conversations and do all of those sorts of things that might be the second level. And then, you know, if you decide that you want to get into Facebook and all of that, we've seen successes. I've got actual numbers of successes of advisors using social media. But usually the advisors have stopped before they've reached that success, because they just go, it's a lot of work, it's all this compliance and posting all these updates, and that's frankly not what it's about. Social media is about being out there, getting exposure, and being social with those that might have an interest in knowing more about who you are and what it is that you do. Yes, you want to connect with your clients, but it's really all about the exposure for prospects. So I've written a whole book on social media for financial advisors, because I think that as simple a concept it is, because of the compliance, it has been so it's complex. It really is complex, and advisors need the help to figure out what it is that they're supposed to do, what's really going to work, and where am I just going to be wasting my time? Because not an advisor I know or any advisor that exists that wants to waste time in social media.
Yeah, and I think I've seen that there's when people are just getting started, it really feels overwhelming, like it's so hard and they don't have time to figure it out. But
you know, my experience is that once you get going, it's really not that hard. And if there's a resource like your book that really is speaking to financial advisors, really awesome, because that can cut through the learning curve.
The other thing is, if you hire somebody under the age of like 25, they can do this stuff so quickly. It's all you have to be able to do is have a conversation about what you'd like to have happen. And, you know, somebody under the age of 25 can do this stuff in a couple of minutes, where it might take somebody that's a little bit older a lot more time to kind of figure out the nuances of the software or the, you know, the online program, as opposed to having somebody else who knows how to do that. You don't need to be the expert. You just need to know what you want the outcome to be.
Yeah. So let's take this discussion into a little bit about websites. So how should advisors be looking at updating their websites?
Well, there's advisors that have some older platforms where their websites are on, and I, you know, when we look at some of the websites, we just say, okay, this website, if you look at this, does this look like a progressive new website, or does this look like something that hasn't been updated since, you know, the 1990s or something? And a lot of financial advisor websites, they were done several years ago, and they're up there, and they look old. And here's the problem with that. And when I say look old, it just means that maybe the screen space is really small, sort of a column in the middle, or it doesn't have pictures, or it's got a bunch of clip art or graphics that aren't people that work in the office. It just looks like it's not a personal site. It looks like it's it could be for any kind of a company. And there's lots and lots and lots of words on the site. Well, today, the goal is to have few words that concisely describe what it is that you do, and I mean a sentence or two on the home page. That's it. And then it's all about navigation to have them be able to see who this firm is, feel who this firm is, be able to see the people that work at the firm. One of the number one things that we do to update websites, or we recommend to update websites, is to say, change your home page picture. You might have some scrolling pictures, but make sure one of them is somebody that works in your office. Because when someone's coming to an independent advisor's website, or even a website at a, you know, a wirehouse or anything like that, they're not looking for the big firm. They're looking for you. Who am I going to be talking to? Who am I going to be meeting with? What is this person about? And it's true, the most clicked on page on your website is the About Us page, or the page that describes your bio or who you are. But why not give them some of that on the home page and let them see who it is that they're going to be working with? It really makes a site come alive. So few words, more authentic pictures, and very simple navigation that gets them to go where you want them to go. So let's say you've got a few targets. You work with those that are getting ready to here's an example. We work with this one firm. They have a target of, they work with people that are getting ready to retire and people that are in retirement. So on their homepage, they've got two boxes that you can click on when you get to the homepage. One says, if you're nearing retirement, click here. If you're in retirement, click here. And so if somebody gets to that site and they're nearing retirement, they go, oh, that's all these people work with, just people like me. Mm-hmm. And it works. It's crazy, because what you're doing is identifying most of the population, but they people want to feel that you know something about what it is that they need. And you can do that no matter what your target is. So it's that's basically what we recommend. I don't think you've got to go through and make massive changes and spend $10,000 to change your website. I think you update your profile, or you update your template that you're using to something that's more progressive. You don't want to look like you're sort of behind the times as a financial advisor, because clients in their 40s, 50s, and 60s want to know that you're technologically savvy, and your website, although it doesn't say whether you are or you're not, it shows something about your firm. And we want to make sure that we're showing that we have the technological savvy to be able to serve clients who have complex needs.
Yeah, I would just add that how important it is to have good pictures on your website. If you're professionally taken photos, we didn't have pictures for the longest time, and we finally took all our staff down to get professional photos taken. It was really, we had a fun morning doing it. But I think it's important. Sometimes I see pictures on websites that I can't believe someone would actually put out publicly.
I know. And part of that is just, they're not paying attention to it. It's
right.
a picture from a long time ago, and someone else put it up there, and maybe they don't even go to the site. Well, it's time to pay a little bit more attention to that because, again, people are going to Google you when they are getting ready to come in and see you or come to a seminar or come to an event or someone's referred you. They won't sometimes look. They will always look. They will always search for you today because it's not like we're hiring a private investigator. We're leaning over to our laptop and typing in your name to see what you're about or to get directions to your office or whatever it is. And we don't want that to be the stopping point that gets them to not come into the office and see you.
Wow, this is so much great information, Mary Beth. I can't believe it, but we're out of time now. But I want to, if people want to get a hold of you or learn more about what you do or some of the resources you have, where would they go?
You can go to redzonemarketing.com, and that's the best place to find all things. We've got lots of free resources under a section on our website called Freemiums. There's all sorts of free resources and articles and worksheets and downloads and videos and all sorts of things that you can that a financial advisor could access and help them with their business. And then we also have some resources like the book for social media for financial advisors and the online training for social intelligence and, you know, six other books that I've written as well.
And I would encourage the listeners to get on Mary Beth's email list. I get her emails. Do I get them weekly, Mary Beth?
Weekly, yes.
Weekly. There's videos. There's really great resources. She's Mary Beth makes sure that it's her original content, and then there's also resources just from all the research that Mary Beth does. And I find it so valuable, and there's often videos, so you get to see how great Mary Beth is and hear her advice. So I really am so grateful. Thank you so much, Mary Beth. Again, it's redzonemarketing.com. And just by end by saying, I'm Ellen Rogan, and if you want more prosperity and success tips, you can find them on my website at ellenrogan.com. And until next time, the question to ponder is, how big of a positive impact are you willing to make? I'm wishing you success in every area of your life. Remember, be great and create great every single day.
Horse's Mouth presentation is offered specifically for financial advisors and may not be reproduced, broadcast, or distributed without permission from Horse's Mouth. Unauthorized use, reproduction, or distribution of this material is a violation of federal law and punishable by civil and criminal penalties.